From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this news. Ben Stevens, the former Alaska Senate president once investigated for corruption by federal authorities, has landed a job in Governor Mike Donlevy's administration. Nat Hertz with Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Stevens will work as one of Donlevy's three policy advisors, focusing on transportation, legislation, and fishing, says Donlevy spokesman Jeff Turner. Stevens is a son of the late U.S. Senator Ted Stevens. Ben Stevens spent 5 years in the state Senate after Governor Tony Knowles appointed him to an open seat in 2001. He ran unopposed in 2002, then didn't seek re-election in 2006 amid the federal corruption investigation. The FBI raided Stevens' offices in the summer of 2006, as well as those of at least five other state legislators. Attention on Stevens focused on consulting work he said he did for oilfield services company Vico while he was serving in the Senate. The payments totaled more than $240,000 over 5 years, and Stevens never said exactly what he did to earn the money. At the trial of a different state lawmaker in 2007, a Vico executive said on the witness stand that he had bribed Stevens and another senator. But prosecutors never charged Stevens with a crime, and he always denied wrongdoing. Last year, Stevens said he was considering the idea of running in the Republican primary for governor, though he never entered the race. He's been working as president of Cook Inlet Tug and Barge, which operates from the Aleutians to southeast Alaska. As a consultant earlier in his career, many of Stevens' clients came from the fishing industry. They included fish processors, a group of crab processors, and an organization representing Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska pollock trawlers. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Many enrolled at the Bethel Area Alternative Boarding School, the Kuskokwim Learning Academy, were found cheating on computer-based math curriculum. The problem was discovered after many of their students were tested last fall and found to be below pre-algebra level. KYUK's education reporter Christine Trudeau has the details.
The new school's site administrator, Walt Betts, says that September test scores were terrible.
We thought, well, maybe the kids just weren't testing well. But then we looked at other kids' scores over a long-term period and noticed that students would come into our school with higher math scores than after they'd been here for a year.
The Kuskokwim Learning Academy, known as KLA, is the district's only alternative boarding school in the Lower Kuskokwim School District. Its mission is to, quote, act as a dropout prevention program emphasizing alternative education practices. In other words, it's the last stop before dropping out for students in trouble. The school has 65 enrolled students, but no actual math teacher, so mathematics is taught by computer. Students would spend an hour a day being instructed by a system called Alex. They then were free to finish work on their own, but it turns out that wasn't working out so well, says Betts.
It was commonplace for kids when they got to something they didn't understand it, they would just Google it, and then it would show the answer, and then they would put the correct answer into the Alex question, and I think that was pretty widespread.
This meant students appeared more competent than they actually were in courses like algebra and geometry, and as recent as last year, were getting credit for classes that they had no mastery in, but were still able to graduate based on the Alex math test scores. It took the administration a while to figure this out, in part because last year, five of KLA's nine staff members left the school.
There was like a combination of discoveries. Because we had this huge turnover of staff, and most of the people doing the math weren't here anymore, and most of the people running the program weren't here anymore. And so it was a really steep learning curve, and it took a while for us to uncover all of these elements that were contributing to these low scores.
The problem may have existed since 2015, Bett says, when a fire forced the school to move into another school's building.
Whenever there's a catastrophe, like a fire or something like that, it takes time to regroup because it's a certain shock that teachers and students go through. And I think finally the air just started to clear this year and see a road ahead.
Betts told the LKSD school board last week that he hopes to address the situation by increasing the schedule to four classes per semester and moving to a video teleconference system that's used by many other schools in the state. Betts says the system has been difficult to set up in the school's new location in the past, but with the district's help, he's looking forward to offering teleconference classes in pre-algebra and algebra 2 this spring, and algebra 1 in geometry in the fall. In Bethel, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Kodiak residents headed to high ground Friday morning after an evacuation notice following the magnitude 7.0 earthquake near Anchorage. While the evacuation on icy morning streets itself was carried off without incident or accidents, confusion surrounding conflicting evacuation notices caused many in Kodiak to question the process that led to the evacuation. KMXT's Maggie Wall has more from Kodiak.
Many Kodiak residents wondered why no sirens sounded in town for an evacuation when the tsunami warning was first issued at 8:35 a.m. by the National Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. Instead, the sirens and the order to evacuate came at approximately 10:15, 40 minutes after the initial tsunami warning, and just 10 minutes before the wave, if one was generated, was to hit. Adding to the confusion, sirens were audible in some areas early on. Those were likely the Coast Guard base, located 6 miles south of town, ordering evacuation of low-lying areas. The updated inundation zones show that most of the base proper could be submerged if a major tsunami were to hit the Niman Peninsula, where the base is located. The Coast Guard Air Station also got aircraft up as soon as possible after receiving the initial National Weather Service warning. That is standard policy, according to one of the helicopter pilots who spoke with KMXT on Friday. Kodiak City Manager is designated as the head of the local Emergency Operations Center, or EOC. Manager Mike Twenge is the one who decides whether or not to sound the tsunami alarms and order an area-wide evacuation. He held a meeting Friday afternoon with local media to clear up confusion on what happened during the tsunami warning period. The city's police chief and fire chief also attended. KMXT spoke with Twenge following the meeting. He explained the sequence of events.
As soon as we were notified that there's an earthquake in Anchorage, the staff set up the Emergency Operations Center. We looked for our information source, which is the Tsunami Warning Center out of Palmer. We had, at one point, it was the Cook Inlet region was going to be activated. Kodiak was in the clear. Later, we heard that Kodiak was not in the clear, and so we initiated the sirens to evacuate the lower-lying community area. And later, that threat was gone, and we issued the all clear.
When asked how he would respond to those critical of the delayed evacuation notice, Twenge says he acted based on the information he had at the time.
Like I said, when we gather that information, we put it out as quick as possible. And if we didn't have the information to say, evacuate any sooner, we wouldn't do that.
Twenge also said that the city's information came from official sources.
Yeah, we had information from the Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer and the State Emergency Operations Center at Fort Rich.
The primary Emergency Operations Center for Alaska is located on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. While Anchorage suffered major damage from the quake, Kodiak officials say there were no impacts and no accidents related to the quake or the evacuation. In Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.
Governor Mike Donlevy named an incoming Republican state representative to be his corrections commissioner. Nancy Dahlstrom was elected to the Eagle River House seat held by Republican Representative Dan Sadler, who unsuccessfully ran for Senate. When there is a legislative vacancy, state law calls for the person appointed to be from the same party as the person who left. Traditionally, parties send a list of finalists to the governor for consideration. The governor also tapped an attorney who's been involved in conservative causes to be his attorney general and a victims advocate to be his public safety commissioner. The appointments of Kevin Clarkson as attorney general and Amanda Price as public safety commissioner are subject to legislative approval. And the trailing candidates in the back-and-forth, nearly tied race for House District 1 is now appealing the results. This afternoon, Catherine Dodge filed an appeal with the Alaska Supreme Court.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980. Proud supporter of independent thought, whether that's online, over the air, or in a bottle. More at sierranevada.com. From Little Passports, a monthly subscription service for kids. Each package includes games, souvenirs, and activities from a new country, designed to spark curiosity in cultures around the globe, at littlepassports.com/radio. And from the Pajamagram Company, offering 26 matching holiday pajamas for the whole family, including dogs and cats, with Snoopy, Star Wars, and Saint Nick themes, in knits, fleece, and flannel. Learn more at pajamagram.com.